This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to Battle for Malaysia, our coverage of GE15 all night. I'm Shao-Yik, and joining me in the studio, Dashrin Johan, still in the studio with us, staying strong, Dr. Bridget Welsh, Honorary Research Associate at the University of Nottingham, Malaysia, Asia Research Centre. And we're doing TalkBack all night. WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 with your messages or voice notes. Tell us how you're feeling, not just about the election so far, but there's so many results coming in fast and furious, so do send them in. And for the first time, our broadcast is also being live video streamed on our website, on our YouTube and Facebook channels, and on our BFM app. So watch it there and drop us your thoughts in the comments as well. We've got lots of news updates. Dash, take it away.
All right. So as of right now, unofficially, again, we are taking this from Malaysia Kini. Barisan Nasional has 14 seats, Perikatan Nasional 13, Pakatan Harapan 31, GPS 14, and one by Parti Bangsa Malaysia. But I think what's more importantly is what some of these seats are. So, for example, I think one of the most important seats that we have sort of have an unofficial result is Muhyiddin. Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin, who has been holding PAGO for many, many, many years. He has retained that seat with a majority of 10,000 votes. Then we have PBM leader Larry Seng. He retains his seat, Julau Parliament seat, with a 1,340 vote majority. He beat GPS. But I guess the biggest news coming out right now, it's still unofficial votes. Some votes are left to be counted, but just based on what we have right now, is YB Nurul Izzah is trailing in her constituency of Pematang Pau. You know, as we know, the Anwar family has held Pematang Pau for many, many, many years. So if this is, you know, ends up being the result, it will be definitely something, you know, rather significant, very significant, in fact, rather seismic shifting when it comes to Malaysian politics. Dr. Bridget, do you have any thoughts on some of these major results that have unofficially been announced?
I think there are two. Mm-hmm. The first point I would make is that I think Muhyiddin Yassin will be a big winner tonight. And not only is a winner in PAGO, but you can see that his coalition that he led has actually performed exceptionally well, even in so many of the other seats. And I think that this particular younger voter Malay wave, and so we see that many of the Malay votes moved away from BN to Perikatan Nasional. What was the product of that? I think there are three reasons. Number one, for good or for bad, if people have different opinions on this, Muhyiddin Yassin still remained a very popular prime minister, and his leadership was, has connected with a lot of the Malay electorate, and we can see that in the election results. The second thing is that their campaign was the most well organized strategically. It was planned, and they had the candidates in place early. You could see their machinery was focused, and they spent a lot. And that brings me to the third point, is they had a lot of money in this campaign, a lot of money. Now, there are lots of questions you can ask about that, but I think when you go to the ground, you could see that they had the resources, and you can even compare it to BN in many constituencies. So I think, you know, this is an interesting storyline for Muhyiddin Yassin, and the question is whether or not PN will have more seats than BN. It's looking like it might be in that circumstances, but we will see. There's numbers that are still happening.
And on the note of Johor first, while we are talking about Tan Sri Muhyiddin, we have a question on Twitter. Are the dynamics in Johor the same as other states? The second estate in Johor has a lot of good or bad, depending on who you talk to, influence.
Well, I think that, we can see that those issues would have played out in certain constituencies such as Muar. But I think that I feel that this particular election, those issues were less important than they were at the state level. I think what's important were the kind of the dynamics that were taking place nationally in terms of voter trends with PN gaining. And I think while they plateaued and they might have even gone further, and there was some, Muhyiddin's comments provided a baseline, they gained through the campaign. So I think that the estate factors that you speak about are not as important at the national level.
Mm. And any response to what's the news coming out on Nurul Izzah?
Well, I think that the results are, it looks like she has lost, but again, I think there's some recounting going on in that constituency. This seat was always a very tough seat. I think that, based on my personal projections, I had put that into my hot seat list, in part because of what we saw is what potential projections could happen if PN gained votes, especially among young people. It was a close seat. And I think, I think it's unfortunate that a young woman and young dynamic woman is not going into parliament. And I think, but at the same time, it also speaks to the challenge that Harapan faces of winning in Malay constituencies.
Bridget, I want to come back again to Johor. We had another question on WhatsApp from Haley. Johor is a BN stronghold state. Will the changes that PH and Muda want to make be lip service only? Will we ever see Johor turn into a PH state in the future, at least a split state?
Well, I think we have to look at the results as a totality, right? We've seen changes in the northern part of the state in terms of the PN gains. We've seen the BN will maintain many of their core seats, although I think there is counting going on in some of the recounts and going on in some seats like Simbrong and others. I don't see this as this kind of sharp divide between BN and Pakatan Harapan, as we saw in the past. I think we now see three different coalitions. In terms of the issues and development of Johor, I think the questions of this particular person is extremely important, right? I do believe that we will have leaders in any government that come from Johor. And I think that the hope is that to bring the Johor's issues, particularly the economy and the growth, back to the table. I do feel that, Malaysia's going into a hard economic winds, but the growth in Johor will be essential for that. And so I expect in any cabinet that is formed that you will have significant Johor representation.
I think we have Dato' Larry Seng back on the line. Dato' Larry, can you hear? No.
We seem to be losing Dr. Larry.
Well, right? If he's in Jolau, the internet is very struggled right there, and those many parts of it, I guess.
Absolutely.
Right. So I guess, Bridget, let's just continue our conversation here as we try, perhaps, to get Dr. Larry back online. When we look at, who is potentially losing in Permatang Pau, we are talking about one of the biggest names in our political landscape, who generally is known, at least by many people, as a hardworking MP, someone who is very moderate as well, things like that, someone who has great policy ideas, always focusing on policies as compared to chest beating and all these kinds of stuff. Why is it that what's making Harapan struggle to get the Malay vote, especially in many of these key seats, where even we are looking at someone like YB Nurul Izzah, who's also, either lost a seat or is, in a very, very, very tight fight right now?
I think Pakatan Harapan, as a coalition, has faced the demonization of that is seen to be representing non-Malays. And that, particularly after the UMNO's loss in 2018, this particular narrative gained even greater traction, the sense of displacement of the Malay community. And I think that Pakatan Harapan has tried to address this particular narrative, it hasn't necessarily been able to do so on the ground. And Muhyiddin Yassin's PN has been able to take over that particular banner. The sense of becoming the protector, the sense of being able and part of that brings me to the second issue, right? Which is that Perta National used an ultra-Malay nationalist campaign. And it used the issues of race relations in a particular sets of ways. And while we think about Penang as a multi-ethnic state where, you know, people live coexistently, which they do, and thrive, I would also say that, you know, Penang is also one of those places that has highly racialized politics, especially on the mainland where Perhentian Pao is located. And I think that there's a sense, if you had a split in the Malay vote, you would have ended up having a result in that regard.
We do have waiting on Zoom, Ben Sufian, Program Director from Merdeka Center. Thank you so much, Ben, for joining us and for your patience in waiting. How have you been feeling about the night so far?
Well, I mean, so far, I think, you know, what we saw in the surveys leading up to the election appears to be panning out, that there is a surge of Malay support for Perikatan Nasional. And we can see this in the, you know, massive wins experienced by the party in the northern states. What we are waiting are the results coming from states like Pahang, Perak, and also across Selangor, to see whether or not Perikatan Nasional's increase in support is able to generate more seats for them.
And, you know, everyone's talking about the position of the Prime Minister this this election, right? So do you want to share some thoughts about, you know, who's still really in the running, especially since we've been talking about Muhyiddin's win in Pago?
Well, I think at this point in time, given how poorly Barisan Nasional has fared, well, there's still a lot of seats, official results still haven't arrived yet. But, you know, we think that they're not going to do so well, because if Perikatan is able to win in places like Tasik Lugo, Kepala Batas, that means a lot of seats that have been with Barisan Nasional for the last 60 years are on the verge of falling. And so this is something quite landmark, a kind of political tsunami again. And therefore, I think the individuals that are left standing for prime ministership is either Anwar Ibrahim or Muhyiddin Yassin, depending on how they are able to form a coalition. Doesn't appear at this point in time that both coalitions, PN or PH, is able to secure 112 seats by themselves. And so the question mark is, you know, with whom could they ally with to get a simple majority?
Ben, I want to get your thoughts on, you know, Dr. Bridget also talked about it a little bit. I want to get your thoughts on what's contributing to Perikatan Nasional's surge in popularity. Because I think you can remember there was at one point, you know, after Lanka Sheraton, where everybody was saying, oh, it's just counting the days before Perikatan Nasional gets wiped out, before Bersatu gets wiped out, so on and so forth. But we've seen over the past few elections that they've gone from strength to strength. And now if you look at, you know, even in Permatang Pao, which, I you know, the Anwar family has been holding since the 80s, and you know, YB Nurul Izzah is such a popular candidate in all instances. Many people really like her. But PN is showing a very, very strong showing in that seat. In fact, unofficially, results are indicating that YB Nurul Izzah might have lost already. What do you think is contributing to this wave in the Malay seats towards Perikatan Nasional?
Well, I think number one, you know, the way many Malay voters perceive the situation is very different from a lot of people, you know, in Kuala Lumpur or Klang Valley sees these things. I think from the Malay lens, the Sheraton move was not a bad thing. It was to restore Malay control over the country's politics. Because during that 22 months of Pakatan Harapan's rule, the perception that has been played up and ingrained was that the Malay leadership in Pakatan Harapan was very weak, and that the coalition really was run by the guys in the AP. And that, I think, went home. And when Muhyiddin Yassin, you know, orchestrated or participated or basically benefited from the shift in power, he was seen by many average Malay voters as someone who restored Malay control over the country's politics. That's number one. But even before that, for voters who are 30 years old and older, who still remember the 1MDB episode 5 years before, he is also associated with someone who spoke truth to power, who spoke truth to Najib and paid a dear price by being dismissed from the party and being cast out from UMNO and lost his job as DPM. So he's also seen as someone who's serious about fighting corruption, not just talking about it, but, you know, trying to do something. So a lot of people may disagree with this, but our surveys in that period from February to May 2020 showed that before the Sheraton move, only about 20% of Malay voters were happy with the direction of the country. After the Sheraton move, the figure jumped to 80%, 80%. And that corresponded with the percentage of votes that went, Malay votes that went to other parties than Pakatan Harapan. So, you know, the identity politics that we have in this country is very much alive. And I think Perikatan Nasional benefited from that. Perikatan Nasional also benefited from the inflation issue that has gripped the country from about May or June this year, and has also benefited from the very poor ratings of UMNO President Zahid Hamidi. So people make these choices and they choose the least worst. And in this instance, Muhyiddin Yassin is seen as a steady pair of hands that could guide the country over all the other candidates that are vying for the office.
Ben, I also want to get your thoughts on what young people's perspective of Perikatan Nasional, which, you know, also has not just Bersatu, but also PAS, you know, in it, among its component parties. A lot of times, at one point again, you know, people tend to sometimes laugh at PAS or this sort of underestimate them, think that, you know, oh, nobody is going to care about them outside of Kelantan and Terengganu. You know, these are the kind of conversation sentiments that you hear sometimes anecdotally. But they seem to be doing well, you know, even in other states, they pick up, if not a seat, fairly sizable vote. I'm wondering what young people think about Perikatan Nasional.
Yeah, I think number one, we also need to understand that the young people in the country is not homogenous. You know, about nearly 70% of young people in Peninsula Malaysia are Malay Muslim, and many of them come from lower income or lower middle income families that had suffered greatly during the pandemic due to loss of job and loss of income. So there is a great deal of resentment as well as anger towards the government. And when we look at these things through our surveys of young people from the beginning of this year, even during the pandemic, we found that the level of trust and appreciation towards political parties and leaders generally were low, but they held Muhyiddin Yassin in high esteem. And we asked them why this was the case. And they said that, well, you know, he's the prime minister. He seems to be handling COVID right well. You know, they appreciate the emergency. They mostly appreciate the cash transfer programs that he presided over. When it comes to PAS, many young people, you know, do not have in-depth understanding in terms of what really is happening behind the scenes, behind the facade of statements and, you know, televised piety. And so people don't understand these things, you know, very much. And the issues of environmental degradation or mismanagement or incompetence, you know, doesn't go very far. In part because a lot of that stuff is actually in English. And so it doesn't flow to the public. There isn't enough debate and discussion about the performance of candidates and leadership coming from PAS. As a result, people fall back on the default perceptions of PAS that A, they're really fighting for Islam. B, they are religiously learned people. C, they may not be very competent, but they are good at heart. They are good individuals, you know, generally. And so many of them also have a large following outside of politics. I mean, if you look at Spotify and look at how many followers Hadi Awang has, how many followers Tuan Ibrahim has on Spotify listening to the religious lectures that he's given, there's hundreds of thousands of young Malaysians there. So I think a lot of people underestimate PAS because they think that there's a party of villagers, but the reality is that PAS is supported by a whole segment of civil servants, professionals, business owners that cuts across the whole country. And it's growing. It's growing because it has an organic network and it works on the basis that it's a religious duty. So they don't require as much cash to operate like parties like, you know, Barisan Nasional or PH. The spirit of volunteerism is still quite high. So a lot of people underestimate this. And because Barisan Nasional carries on leaders that are involved in court cases, Barisan Nasional has not changed. At the same time, Pakatan Harapan continues to be what it is and carries the continuing stigma or misperception that it is weak in terms of addressing the Malay grouses and issues. And therefore, Perikatan Nasional and by default PAS becomes the natural choice to go after, to change after losing trust in UMNO or Barisan Nasional.
I understand that Hadi Awang has had a press conference. In that press conference, he says that the PN has enough seats to form government. I do think that we have a situation here where we have three very important developments, the first of which is Barisan Nasional has performed abysmally. Number two, we do see a revival, as Ben has so wisely spoken about, in terms of the explanations of what the dynamic on the Malay ground, where PN has actually done well in many seats. I think we are still at a position to that it's not too close to call from the perspective of the overall numbers. But one has to recognize that PN has done better than some people had expected. Right. I expected them to do much better, do well, and they have done well. Mm-hmm. But they've even done better, as Ben pointed out, in places in Penang where this is where they were not expected to win.
Yeah, and as Ben had said, not to underestimate PAS in this whole race. But Ben...
PN is PAS. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have to understand the majority of the...
Exactly.
Bersatu has provided the money in the face, but the key supports behind PN are PAS seats.
Right.
And unfortunately, we have to wrap this up. Ben, thanks so much for speaking to us. That was Ben Sufian, Program Director of Merdeka Centre. We'll go for a quick break and come back to continue our battle for Malaysia coverage. In the meantime, WhatsApp or send us your voice notes at 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio, or drop your comments if you are watching our live stream. Do stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.